The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and their guests on Talk Radio Network FM are not necessarily the views and opinions of Talk Radio Network FM, its management, staff, advertisers, associates, or affiliated stations. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You said you've made transgressions. How would you, in your own words, describe?
I worry day to day. Honestly, I really do. Because I pray to make sure...
As a female, as a Muslim, as a student of this university...
No, I don't buy it. He didn't... You know, he did apologize.
You got a loaded gun. Was your gun loaded today?
That's just stuck on stupid.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. Yes! Why is that freaking Ellis Hennekin over there on Red Eye, man? Okay. We're going to have Ted Bell on the line here. I just wanted to mention a new study says toddlers should face an intervention if they're too fat. Plus, if you're in Boston, D.C., San Francisco, or Atlanta, you may become a victim... And we say may, you may become a victim of cybercrime. We got Ted Bell in Beverly Hills tonight with us.
Ted's a Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Hey, thanks very much, Bill. This is Ted Bell. Come on down to Ted's in Beverly Hills. We still have the juiciest tenderloin. We got that beef tenderloin, and we've got that beautiful, beautiful porterhouse steak for two.
We want to put our meat in your mouth.
Ted Bell with us from Ted's of Beverly Hills, and you have a porterhouse for two, man, huh?
Yeah, and you were in the other night, weren't you?
I did come in, and it was delicious. I want to let everybody know that that porterhouse for two, what is that, 48 ounces?
That is 48 ounces, and we bring it to your table. And remember, at Ted's of Beverly Hills, this is not a sizzler, and I don't mean to put down sizzler, but when you ask for how you want your steak cooked, you know that we recommend medium to medium rare. As a matter of fact, Bill, a lot of people don't know this, but rare steak should be cold in the middle.
You know, I didn't know that until I went to, it wasn't your restaurant, it was another one. I think it was a Ruth's Chris in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And, well, I can hear the way you said, uh-huh.
No, I can understand. You're not getting to eat in my restaurant all the time.
All right, but I went, and it was cold, and they kept coming back and saying, no, senor, no, that's exactly how a rare steak is supposed to be cooked.
Well, in this instance, I'm going to have to concur with my, what part of Mexico was it?
Cancun.
Well, they should know. They do a lot of tourist business here. But I do want to mention that that is how it's supposed to be cooked.
All right, Ted, now let me, before we... move off into any other business. I want to thank you on behalf of Kids for USA, which is the fitness organization for kids, donating those three Lakers seats for the, I believe, and Jason will give me the, I think it's April the 2nd?
I don't know. I know it's a Jazz game.
Yeah, the Lakers and the Jazz. And I want to thank you very, very much for donating those three tickets for the kids so that they can enjoy themselves and watch the basketball game.
I do want to tell you, Bill, that we do what we can for the community, and we do have those Lakers seats. Those are generally seats that we use for clients, and when you said that you wanted this for a fitness organization, I was willing, you know, to talk with you about it. I want to tell you that I did not know the ins and the outs of the organization you were talking about.
Well, I just wanted to thank you. You're not familiar with Kids for USA?
I was not. I thought you said to me it was a fitness organization.
It is a fitness. It's to help children get into shape.
I thought that this was a group of young people that are currently fit. Now, this is a communication problem, and I don't have any. I'm not blaming you. I think it is an unfortunate misunderstanding. And these misunderstandings happen. But I wanted to say to you on this show, on the air, so that your listeners can hear me and know that I am not a guy that hides from responsibility. I am saying to you that I apologize that I did not get the full information about this organization. And as a result, as you know, I cannot honor your request for these tickets.
Ted, there's nothing wrong with this organization, I can tell you that.
No, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the organization.
Well, I think that you didn't tell me that you were going to say this.
I did not have this information until just before we went on the air. And I don't want to embarrass you, Phil.
I want to say right now, Kids for USA is a legitimate organization that helps children with weight issues, helps children with conditioning issues. This is a major news story, all right? And I don't want anybody getting any idea that there's something wrong with them.
I'm not saying that at all.
Well, I think that when you come on the program and you tell me that you are going to decline our request for tickets.
Bill, I would not have done that had I had an opportunity to tell you off the air. But I just got the information from Kelly literally 30 seconds before we went on the air.
What information is it that you get? I don't understand.
Well, the information, it's got nothing to do with the organization. It has to do with my relationship with the Los Angeles Lakers. And what I mean by that is my relationship as a season ticket purchaser. And you have to understand what I do for a living. I'm involved in contact with customers. And
no, I know that. What's the problem? Why can't you give us these tickets?
The nature of the organization is one that I don't think is conducive to our business.
I want you to be clear, Ted. If you wanted to bring this up on the air,
I'm not hiding from anything, Phil. If you want to ask me a question,
what is it that you don't want? You're making by, you know, I started this quarter hour thanking you for these tickets. Now you're telling me there's not going to be any tickets.
I explained that to you.
To be honest with you, not very satisfactorily.
Why not?
Even if you only found out 30 seconds before we went on the air, you could have said to me, Phil, can I talk to you about something at the break? And
on the air?
Yes, you could have said that on the air.
Well, then what are we going to talk about for 15 minutes?
I would have found something else to talk about.
Well, I'm sorry, Phil, but I sponsored this segment, so I had to make a judgment call.
So you make a judgment call by saying that we're not going to get these three tickets, these Lakers season tickets that you have to use, because of the nature of the charity that I'm involved in.
Not because there's anything wrong with the charity, because if I have those kids sitting in my seats, then people see that there are people sitting in Ted Bell's Laker seats. One of the things that I think is unfair about this is you make me look like that I'm somehow the bad guy here.
Well, Ted, you're the guy that is not explaining anything. You're taking away three tickets that you promised to three kids because of the nature of the organization.
I'm trying to express this in a way that your audience will understand. This is a fitness organization, right?
Yes.
And the children that are in this organization have an obesity problem. Is that correct?
Yes, they do, and it happens to be.
All right, I'm not knocking the nature of the work that's done by this great organization. I'm saying, if I've got three children, you understand that if a Laker game is televised, or they have the Jumbotron, or they have any kind of telegenic or video equipment, that there are three kids sitting in my seats that obviously are not what you see at a courtside seat at a Laker game. To give you an example, you know that Jack Nicholson and Lou Adler and people like that are there, you know, Diane Cannon and so forth. Matt McConaughey is there, Sandra Bullock is there.
What are you telling me, man, that three fat kids don't belong?
I did not use that word at all, Phil. I did not use that word at all.
Are you telling me that you can't have three kids? Okay.
But Zac Efron has season tickets to the Lakers, and I know you know who he is.
Now, frankly, yeah, vaguely.
Vaguely, huh? Well, you know, he may be listening to you.
Well, I'm sorry, vaguely. Is he a TV guy?
Yeah, he's a TV guy. You know,
Ted, I'm not really interested in who's sitting courtside. I want to know. You've taken away these tickets from these kids, and I'm beginning to get the idea that you took the tickets away from these kids because they're not presentable?
I want you to remember something, Mr. Henry. I'm a father.
I know you are.
And I'm also your sponsor.
I know that, too.
And you made a reference just then that I think there's something wrong with the way these kids look. I don't think there's anything wrong with the way they look. I think that it clashes. I think it the way they look and they in a courtside seat at a Laker game clashes.
Clashes? What do you mean a clash? What are we talking about? Wearing a pair of pants with the wrong sports jacket? I'm talking here about...
No, don't try your jokes with me.
No, I'm not trying to do any jokes. You're the guy that said it clashes. These are kids that wanted to see the Lakers, and you won't let them sit courtside because they're too fat.
Again, I'm a father and your sponsor, and I do not want you to make the claim that I don't want kids there that are too fat.
Then why don't you want those kids sitting there?
I'm going to be at the game. You know that, right?
Yes.
All right, that's me, Ted Bell, and I'm sitting with these three kids. Is that correct?
Yes, you knew that.
Yeah. I didn't know it was going to be me wearing probably pretty expensive, some kind of an expensive sports jacket. I got Jack Nicholson there, and the Jumbotron lights up, and there am I with these three little people, and God love them, but they look like maybe someone pumped them full of air. I don't know what they look like. And
So what? And you know, your jokes aren't funny either.
I'm not joking. I've got three children with the round... You make this very difficult.
Ted, I'm not making anything difficult. You don't want to be seen on the Jumbotron with three fat kids.
I did not say that. And I'm going to warn you for the last time, I don't want to hear that word.
All right. You don't want to be seen on the Jumbotron with three kids who got big round faces and look like they've been pumped full of air.
Had you sent me headshots of these kids ahead of time, all of this could have been avoided.
I didn't know that I had to send headshots of children from a charity so they could sit in your courtside seats.
I want to go on record. Had you sent me headshots, 8x10s, and a resume on each of these children...
What kind of resume? All right, hold on for a minute. 877-876-PHIL. Get on the line with him and find out, if you wouldn't mind, Bud, what exactly this means. If we don't have the tickets for the April 2nd game, which is what he is telling me, am I able to... maybe I'll just purchase all four of those seats from him, and then he won't have to be there. You see what I'm saying? 877-876-PHIL. Your call's next for Ted Bell. We're talking about a Laker game that we were going to have three kids from USA for Kids. These kids are overweight. And Mr. Bell has withdrawn the offer of the tickets because he doesn't want to be seen on the Jumbotron with these three little fat children. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Oh, you really like making me look bad, don't you? I want to go on record as saying we do support children. This is a conversation that I wish I would have had on the air.
Here at Ted's, we want to put our meat in your mouth.
And I want to also say something, Phil.
Hold on for a minute. Back here with Ted Bell on the Phil Hendry Show, our number 877-876-PHIL. Yes, sir?
I don't appreciate having that jingle with the closing line, considering the fact that we're talking about children. Certainly, Phil, you understand it.
Wait, hold on for a minute. That's your advertising slogan, and you knew we were going to talk about kids.
I don't like that you're playing that with "we want to put our et cetera."
All right, I won't play it.
Well, but I paid for the airtime. That's the dilemma I'm having. And we're talking about, so you know that I love children.
Ted, I know you love children. I also know that you pulled away three tickets to a Laker game for these kids that you had promised them because they're overweight.
Okay, thank you. You didn't use fat. I don't even like the word overweight.
Well, I'm not going to say because they look like they've been pumped full of air.
Can we not use something that is less offensive? Can't we say that these kids have a plump? Can we say that they're pleasingly plump?
Well, they can't be that pleasingly plump. You don't want to see them in your seats.
I don't want to see him in my seat.
In your three seat?
No, I don't. I didn't say that either. What I'm trying to get at here, I'm sitting next to Jack Black. I'm sitting next to Snoop Dogg. I've got Diane Cannon, Zac Efron, and then you want me sitting there in a brand new sports jacket with three little roly-poly.
Ted, you don't want to use the word fat because you've already disappointed three children. So you say roly-poly. You say...
So look, don't talk to me like I'm in the third grade.
I'm not.
Then you don't have to go, Ted, you say roly-poly. I find it homoerotic. And
well, I'm trying to be as... You know what? I'm trying to keep a lid on it, too, here. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Ray in Chattanooga listening to us on WPLZ. Ray, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
I got one question asked.
I don't understand am I answering questions for people?
I've got a talk show that I got to do.
Are you a chubby that a chubby woman said no to you?
Is this guy talking to me?
I'm talking,
talking to me?
The idiot that's hurting these kids.
That idiot? I've got a to run. I've got a business to run. I have a
Listen. 12 years ago, I weighed 500 pounds. Today, I weigh 225. If somebody had treated me the way you're treating
your
kids, I would have stayed fat.
Well, that's your decision. I mean, even at 225, you're still not going to make it into the seats that I own.
And I can buy for you three times. I can buy and pay for you three times and not get out of my front pocket.
You can buy and pay for me three times, what, if I got a Slurpee at 7-Eleven? I'm talking about a steakhouse.
So I can buy you, your wife, your children, your grandparents, your parents, your aunts, your uncles, your brothers, your sisters, your cats, your dogs, and not get out of my front pocket.
Not eating the way you eat, you can't. You're going to have to cut back.
And all right, you know what? We can make all the jokes.
I'm not making a joke, Bill.
I'm being just as serious as a sawed-off shotgun.
I'm being serious, too. And when you've got... really? So you got a lot of money, huh? Can you afford $40,000 a seat ringside at the Lakers? Thank you.
I can't give those tickets to those kids for the Laker game because... And I'm going to say it, and I don't care if you don't like it, because they're too fat, and I don't want to have them on the Jumbotron.
And I like the way you use the word Jumbotron, because you're referring to those poor children like they're jumbo. Would you like to say that? Is that what you want to say? That I've got three jumbo-sized... You have embarrassed me, Phil. I'm a sponsor.
Ted, I didn't embarrass you at all. You've used the words jumbo, pumped full of air, roly-poly, pleasingly plump. You don't want to say the children are overweight. This is a charity that I have devoted a lot of time and money to. This is a charity that we were very, very happy when you said you'd donate those three courtside seats for those kids. And then you find out that they're overweight.
Can you tell me how big they are?
Who?
The kids.
I don't know how big they are, and I wouldn't if I could.
Well, I'm told that 61 pounds is normal weight for a 9-year-old kid. How old are they, 9?
Yeah.
Well, if they're... Oh, boy, are you telling me they're over 100 pounds? You know.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Michael in Los Angeles. Michael, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Michael in Los Angeles listening on K-Talk. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing? I just have one
question.
How stupid are you to make such an ass out of yourself on the air? And I'm not talking to you, Phil. I'm talking to your sponsor.
No, Mr. Hendry did not give me the entire information about this promotion that he wanted to do.
It's not a promotion.
You pretend like you're going to give him the tickets, and then after the segment is over, you break it to him gently. It's not like anyone would have really found out. It wouldn't have been front page news. But instead, you've made a complete moron of yourself in front of however many listeners this show has, which I assume is quite a few. So, good job, moron.
Well, not after tonight. You see, you call me a name, sir. And you don't know, I don't know whether or not you own a business. I own a business.
I do own a business. And let's look at this mathematically. I've called you one name. You've managed to call these poor kids five or six names so far.
I did not. Mr. Hendry is the one that referred to them as fat.
You know, you're calling them roly-poly and pleasingly plump and all of this pumped full of air and everything else. Michael, I have to take a break. I appreciate very much your call. Our number, 877-876-PHIL.
That man insulted me, and you stood there, and you let it happen. Almost as if I were your date, you would have just allowed him to pick me up and throw me in the trunk of a car.
Phil Hendry.
Walking naked except high heels.
world-famous Bill Henry Show.
Ted's a Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
We're very proud to sponsor this portion of the Bill Henry Show. You bought it. You keep it.
Here at Ted's, we want to put our meat in your mouth.
You're a sponsor, Ted. I'm proud to have you as a sponsor.
Yeah, but what has happened on this program is I think that you've allowed the reputation of my restaurant and my business to suffer because you're trying to make a point with a lot of your liberal listeners, Phil. I never call any of those children fat. You're aware of what the Mann Act is, aren't you?
I beg your pardon?
You know what the Mann Act is.
The Mann Act, yes, I do.
All right. Then you know it's white slaving.
Yes.
All right. What you did to me and that last caller is not the Mann Act, but it's the talk radio version of that. In other words, you let him buy me. And
that call? Are you kidding or something?
No, I am not kidding. He bought me and used me, and you allowed it to happen.
You're a sponsor on this show, yes, but you still have to defend why it is you will not let three children who are overweight use those seats for the Laker game with a better excuse than you don't want to be seen on the Jumbotron with them.
I never said that. You're the one that drew the connection between the Jumbotron and the size of those children. I said to you that I wanted you to use the terms pudgy but husky, didn't I?
During this commercial break, yes.
All right.
So these children are pudgy but husky.
They are. And it is with great regret that I can't... Look, I'm Ted Bell. If I'm sitting with Zac Efron, I don't know, it's anything you can understand.
Well, go try me, man.
If I'm sitting with these people and I've got on a brand new sports jacket...
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Joanne. She is listening to us tonight on KPWT. Hello, Joanne. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Ted Bell.
Hi there. I just
yes,
have
ma'am.
A comment and a question. If he has children, and if these were his children or his grandchildren, and they were pleasantly plump or whatever he wants to call them, would he be embarrassed to take them and let them sit in those seats and be on the Jumbotron also?
Well, ma'am, you used the term I didn't want. Pleasingly plump. I did not use that term.
Okay.
You used it. You what term?
I told you the term pudgy but husky. Husky.
Okay. Even husky.
All right.
I mean,
and what was your question?
If you have children or grandchildren that are husky, would you be embarrassed to take them and have them sitting in those seats next to you?
Would I be embarrassed to have them sitting in the seats next to me?
Yes.
If it was known that they were my grandchildren, yes, and that's done, then, I would have to have some kind of indication that they're my grandchildren. The point that I'm making is, if I'm sitting in those seats, and I've got grandchildren or children sitting with me, whether they have name tags or a sign, something that is seen on the Jumbotron.
Are you telling me you'd put signs around their necks?
So that people would know. What did the lady ask me?
She wanted to know, would you have a problem sitting with overweight children?
I didn't approve the use of that word.
Well, I'm using it, Ted. Overweight children of yours or grandchildren of yours, would you have a problem with that?
And I said no.
Yeah, you said you wouldn't have a problem if you hung a sign around their neck that said, what would it say?
It would say Ted's grandkid. Did I answer the question?
No, you didn't, ma'am? Because what's the difference if your grandchildren were heavier versus these children, who a lot of it is medical things, not that they're, you know, just overeaters.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. Because if they were my grandchildren, because I own a restaurant, the chances are they would be husky or pudgy, would be the result of food that I serve them at my restaurant, as opposed to some glandular problem.
No, my
kids. If I had proper signage on them. And
so you got a sign around your kid that says Ted's grandkid, so people are going to know that that child is pudgy or husky.
No, I said pudgy and husky.
The kid is pudgy and husky because he got that way eating your food.
Yes, that is what I think is the logical conclusion. Now, what the lady's asking me has to do with glandular conditions. I don't know about that. And that's what I'm worried about, because Henry is going to have these three... three kids with a gland some kind of a distorted gland.
Well, you know, if you weren't so snobby, you wouldn't be wearing these awfully expensive suits. You would be afraid to get ruined or soiled or whatever you think you would catch from sitting next to these children. You know, I think it's pathetic.
If you go to a Laker game, you wear a brand new sports jacket. You've got a child that is husky. They have a perspiration.
But why are you wearing
all kinds
of
body oils?
What do you mean?
This is ridiculous.
Ted, that's a hell of a thing to say about children.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me there wouldn't be body oils?
What about body oils and your sports jacket? Take your sports jacket, leave it at home, wear a sweatshirt or a T-shirt. You're going to a basketball game.
I'm sitting courtside, thank you.
Oh, well, excuse me, you're sitting courtside.
And we know all America's watching him courtside.
Yeah, you think you're Jack Nicholson, is that it?
Oh, I see. So you're jealous, huh?
No. But can I call you Mr. Nicholson?
Phil, don't go there.
No, seriously, can I call you Mr. Nicholson? And, and hey, I got a great idea, Ted. Why don't you wear your shades, too?
You know, you're really starting to piss me off. Excuse my language, ma'am, but he's doing this on purpose.
No, you should wear your sunglasses and your sports jacket, and then people will think...
As educated as you are, can be prejudiced against children.
I'm not prejudiced, ma'am. I'm simply trying to say that with a business to run, I'm sitting next to three husky kids...
But instead of looking at it as a business to run, you should look at this as an opportunity to prove what a great person you are and how you care about what these kids are going through.
Exactly. Hey, Ted, I got a great idea. Why don't you
I think you should have to call these children and you should tell them you're not going.
Oh, okay, well, that's great.
Oh, you know what? That's a great idea, Joanne.
Are you going to make me do that? You can't make me do that.
That's a great idea, Joanne. Thank you so much for your call. 877-876-PHIL. I got a great idea, Ted. Why don't you dress all three of these kids in sunglasses and, like, Jack Nicholson gear, and they'll be like three miniature Jack Nicholsons.
You know what, Phil? You want to make your jokes.
No, I'm not joking at all. That way you wouldn't be embarrassed. So they'll all three have sunglasses, and they'll have their, you know, binoculars. They'll look like Nicholson.
You know, he sits just down court from me. And if I walk in with three huskies... Three husky kids who are dressed up to look like him, he's going to think that I'm running some kind of a scavenger hunt. He's going to think I'm real. He's going to think that I am real nowhere, like I'm all thrilled that I'm sitting next to him. I don't want that to be the case. I certainly don't want to embarrass these children. You'd embarrass them by dressing them as Jack Nicholson.
I dress them as Jack Nicholson, and I dress you as Diane Cannon.
Okay, here, hold on for a minute. Here, listen. Oh, God. Oh, that's great. Are you happy?
877-87. Ted, you started the whole...
Oh, you started it all, huh, Ted? You're the guy that booked three pudge kids. You booked...
I didn't book anything. We gave it away because you said we could. David, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Ted Bell.
Hello.
Yes.
Basically, why doesn't he step up? Be nice. Keep the donation. He can have them announce over Jumbotron, sir. He has given these kids a chance to come to a basketball game because they're working on losing weight as a incentive. And that way he doesn't have to worry about his reputation that he has. They can announce that he looks good in good grades.
I understand, but the point that I was trying to make to Mr. Hendry, and he wouldn't listen to it. If I bring three children who tend to be husky, and then you put them on something called a Jumbotron, you don't think that'd hurt their feelings?
It should.
Oh, so that
they're going to be happy that they're at the game, that you're announcing that they're trying to lose weight, and that's why you're bringing them to the game. As an incentive to continue working at losing more weight. So everybody's in a win-win situation.
If we have the announcer, and I forget what that guy, Lawrence Tanner, and he's got a lisp.
What difference does it make?
The point is, if he says, courtside, we've got three kids from the, you know, from the fat center, if you want to use that word, on our Jumbotron. Now you are, now you've used jumbo and fat. You see what I mean?
No, he doesn't see what you mean. I don't see what you mean.
Everybody knows that it's called a jumbotron.
Let me ask you a question. David, are you overweight?
Putting them on a jumbotron that they're fat.
Are you husky?
I am overweight. I have lost about 12 pounds. I still need to lose about 20 more.
And if you were on it, you would not be offended if someone said, "There's David on the jumbo," you know. And you know how Lawrence Tanner sounds.
I'd be happy. I've been on the jumbotron at the Padres game before.
Yeah, I'll bet
you
have.
I was actually happy. I was waving at the jumbotron as I was sitting there in the seat, happy.
And you didn't mind when the Padre announcer said, "And there's David on our jumbotron."
All right, you know what? Now what he's doing is he's screwing around.
I'm not screwing around. I'm trying to make lemonade out of lemons. I'm trying to make some lemonade out of the lemons you handed me, Hendry.
You're the guy that said, David.
I'm not accusing you. I'm just trying to put you on good footing so that you won't not give these kids who are deserving of these tickets tickets.
Sir, if I walk into the Staples Center with these three husky kids, I'm not going to be on good footing. The floor will collapse.
David, thank you very much for your call. He's really funny. Yeah, he's real, real funny.
All right, so I got off one cutie.
Yeah, you got off one cutie and dropped your phone.
Oh. Like that?
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Ted, for nothing. 877, what?
Yeah, play it. You're going to get angry and everything about it.
No, I got to play a stinking jingle. 877-876-PHIL. Thanks so much, Ted Bell. Do I got to get him back on the air?
Yeah.
Ted's hang up on me. I'll tell you something. I will flay you alive. I'll cut your head off with a dull knife. We on the air? And Ted Bell, sponsoring the Phil Hendry Show.
Here at Ted's, we want to put our meat in your mouth.
Phil Hendry.
All right, so now here's what you're saying. You're bringing back into the picture something the Catholic Church used to do, which was charge for dispensation.
No, Phil, I'm not saying anything like that. I'm not saying that at all.
No, you're bringing back into the picture that some of the Catholic Church would charge for dispensation. They would charge for the sacraments. You're saying that the Protestants should charge gay people to be married in a Protestant church.
I know you're bringing up the Catholic faith. I think it's very unfortunate. The Catholic Church did what it had to do. Time for thought. And the things that we did in those days, which was 500, 600 years ago, you're going to keep on breaking as the boat feather casts the nets over these unfortunate things. I don't think it's right of you to bring that up.
You've got guys like Swaggart. You better down with a whore.
And the fact that there are so many Catholic priests.
But yes, have had their hands in the cookie jar. So we're with the child. It's a very unfortunate thing to be with a child.
But I can tell you, Phil, at the end of the day, the Protestants would be much happier if they go ahead and marry, as Father Staley said this the other day, and he'd had a couple of drinks, he'd go ahead and marry the queers and hit them up for it. And I realize that's a very unchristian thing to say.
I would most certainly say that is unchristian, coming from a priest.
He's back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. All right, Seattle, Boston, D.C. named. What does Seattle, Boston, and D.C. have in common? They are among the riskiest online cities. The riskiest online cities. The following are ranked by Norton, the famous antivirus software company. They are ranked by Norton the top 10 riskiest online cities. Number one, Seattle. Number two is Boston. Number three is Washington, D.C., Number four is San Francisco. Number five is Raleigh, North Carolina. Number six is Atlanta, Georgia. Seven, Minneapolis. Eight, Denver. Nine, Austin. And 10, Portland, Oregon. You'll notice that New York is not there. Los Angeles is not there. Of the most populous cities in the United States, Boston, D.C., San Francisco, Atlanta When I say top most populous, I mean the top 10 most populous cities. And the rest are smaller cities. But Seattle has the distinction of being the birthplace of grunge and housing the nation's first Starbucks, but it's now the U.S. city's most vulnerable to cybercrime. Symantec's Norton team, they teamed up with research firm Sperling to rank the top 50 riskiest online cities. Seattle, Boston, and D.C. topped the list. The study looked for residents who engaged in behavior that could expose them to cybercrime, like, for instance, online shopping and banking, as well as wireless internet access. Researchers then looked at the number of cyber attacks and potential infections as recorded by Symantec's security response. They also looked at the level of internet access, how much people spent on hardware and software, wireless hotspots, and broadband connectivity. All of these things went into them figuring out which cities are the riskiest for online crime. Do I know what I'm talking about? No. But I do see where a lot of online shopping, a lot of online banking, that would expose you to, being exposed. There's wireless internet access. And then they have a bunch of other jazz here. According to Marion Merritt, who is the Norton Internet Safety Advocate, with more people than ever relying on the internet to stay in touch, shop, and pay their bills, feeling confident and secure in our information-driven world is vital. This study highlights the city's most at risk of cybercrime and reminds individuals, families, and businesses across the country of the hazards. But what is the most important aspect of this story, folks? Does anybody know? I've got money that no one knows. Bud, do you know?
What do you mean?
What's the most important aspect of this story about the riskiest cities when it comes to online activity?
The number one city is Seattle, and that's supposed to be a really, nice place.
Wrong. Wrong. The number one thing is the fact that this entire article is an advertisement for Norton's antivirus products. You see?
Oh!
Exactly. And this is what you call, and remember what I told you guys earlier in the show, that the number one story is media? Really, that's the number one story, media. Right under your noses, folks, unless if you didn't have Phil here to sort of point it out to you, right under your noses, Norton, the software company, slipped a news story, and they said, oh, the riskiest, and we're all listening and we're interested. Well, really what this is one big piece of ad copy for Norton, the antivirus company. Now, PC World published this, and I'm not saying they're not a legitimate company, but what I am saying is that Norton, somebody at Norton, came up with a bright idea. Hey, I know. Why don't we have the 10 riskiest cities and we'll put it under our heading and we'll release it as a press release. And everybody, Norton, the antivirus company, and they came up with the whole thing. This is brilliant advertising. It's great marketing. It probably serves a pretty good purpose. I don't know. I will, however, say this to you folks. I put secondary to Norton advertising itself, secondary to that, is exactly how accurate this list is. I'm not trying to knock them. I use their product. But I do not believe that when you look at an article like this, you should say, this is really good stuff to know. I think what you should say first off is, Norton antivirus, man, they really got a great marketing arm because look at what they were able to plant in PC World. And then, and only then, should you look at the list and say, well, let's take a look at the list and see if it adds up. So I knew you guys wouldn't get it.
Well, who's going to think about that, man? You got to be suspicious of everybody. You don't trust no one.
It's not that I don't trust people, Robert. It's that you got to just see what it's about, man. Yeah. Larry, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Gerald Fisher.
Hey, Phil, I really don't know where to start.
Yes, sir.
I was going to ask this racist pig you've got on there.
Hey, I'm not calling you any names. I'm not calling you a name. You got to start off calling me a name. Is that it? Is that how you want this to go? You want to call you redneck? You want me to call you dumb redneck? You want me to call you dumb redneck?
But I should.
Huh? I can't hear you over your CB radio, man. I can't hear you over that CB.
With the way you talk to that lady from Hawaii, I guess you're a male chauvinist pig, too. And since you're such a...
You sound like a dumb tobacco juice swallowing cracker. What you feel like? Feel good about
that? At least I'm not just a hillbilly that interrupts people while they're
speaking. No. You are a hillbilly. You are a hillbilly. You tell me to shut up. No white man tell me to shut up.
All right, come on.
He's back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Congressman Stupak, you are one big piece of human.
You care about the starving millions of African people in this country.
I care
more. You care about the farm workers.
Justice Stevens has courageously served his country from the moment.
Glenn Beck returns in a moment, but first, Chris Matthews, preview special report. Hi, Chris.
Brain.
That's very tough to swallow.
World-famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. This is the late night Truth Is Our Bitch news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Through the looking glass, the Alice in Wonderland journey of talk radio begins right now. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, our website is philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Affiliate spotlight tonight. We welcome on board in Seattle, Cairo, 97.3 FM, and in Myrtle Beach, WGTN, 1400 AM, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Taking a look at you guys. We appreciate it very much that you're a part of our network. A producer with the popular CBS reality series Survivor has been released from custody in the death of his wife, whose body was found dumped near the couple's hotel in Mexico. You might have heard this story. The body of Monica Beresford Redmond was found Thursday in a sewer at the lavish Hotel Moon Palace, where the couple had been staying with their two children. State prosecutors say the body showed signs of possible, and this is the state prosecutor in Mexico, possible strangulation, but they were waiting on the results of an autopsy to determine the cause of death. Her husband is 38-year-old Bruce Beresford Redmond. He's not been charged with a crime, but was detained Thursday for questioning, according to Bello Rodriguez, the outgoing attorney general for Quintana Roo, the state of Quintana Roo, where Cancun is located. Now, this man is a longtime reality television show producer. He works with the TV show Survivor. And we're going to bring on the line now Brad Rifkin, who is in the advertising business in Las Vegas, Nevada, but also has been involved in pitching and producing television shows for a number of years, and he joins us on a newsmaker line in Las Vegas this evening. Brad, thanks for joining us, and how are you this evening, first of all?
I'm doing good, Phil. I'm sorry to hear the news of the miners in West Virginia. It's a very sad story.
It very sad, and a very poignant quote there from the governor on the journey ending.
Yeah, well, our thoughts are with the families. This story in Mexico is a different kind of story. This is a story about a producer, a TV producer. This man, Mr. Redmond, who is a producer on Survivor, he was also involved in some other television shows, Phil, some other reality shows that I'll get for you in a minute, but a number of shows, significant shows, so he knows the reality game. He also is a man who obviously is involved in producing reality television shows for a long time. So the problem, I think, and that I think the evidence is going to show, if this man did this, and we don't know.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. As a matter of fact, we mentioned that he has been released from custody. He was taken into custody, I guess it was yesterday or maybe the day before, when this young lady's body was found, Mrs. Redmond, and the attorney general for the state down there in Cancun has released him, but he can't leave the country.
Right. So I don't know if this man is guilty. I can tell you, though, Phil, having been around television programs for a long time, the pressure of coming up with these ideas. Reality television show is a very popular, it's a very, very popular genre. People love to look at these reality shows.
Well, we don't know if this guy's guilty or anything, okay?
No, I understand that. But this is a significant story. from this standpoint, I know that Hollywood has a history of murder and associated crimes like that. And they aren't all committed by members of the industry. But the reality TV phenomenon is such a pressure-packed phenomenon. Producing these TV shows like this, Bachelor, Dancing with the Stars, American Idol, Survivor, on and on and on it goes. And you've got to come up with these ideas. So you're living with it all the time. I had said to Jim Carson, who's a very good friend of mine and of yours as well, and he does a lot of producing.
I know Jim, yeah. And he does a lot of reality TV show producing.
Right. And he said to me that, and he had been involved with this guy Redman on Pimp My Ride, which is a show that was on as well.
Right.
And he said to me that you live with it. Because the networks like the success of these shows, they don't cost a lot to make, and they make a lot of money. So you're living morning, noon, and night, a 24-hour clock of coming up with ideas, thinking up new scenarios, coming up with new documents on different scene structure all the time. If this man, Bruce Redman, had anything to do with the death of his wife, I'm telling you right now, more than anything, the culprit is not so much Bruce, is it's the show. And it is the, literally, the show itself becomes a living thing.
I hope you're not constructing some Twinkie defense here. You know what I mean?
I'm not going to say that this guy is not responsible for his actions. But in a way, when you are living with a woman and you're down in Cancun, Mexico, and you produce a TV show called Survivor, and you're living with this television show, you may be on vacation, but you're living with this TV show. You know that come Monday, you're back in Los Angeles, you're back in staff meetings, you're back in programming meetings, you're back in a meeting with the network, you're back in a meeting with the studio, you're back in a meeting with the host, you're coming up with ideas. The doorbell rings. It's room service. You suddenly feel almost as if you are on the show. That in order to get immunity, you got to answer that door. She answers the door before you. You strangle her.
And what are you talking about? Are you talking about the actual show?
The way the show is structured, and people that are listening right now will tell you, the way the show is structured, the competition level is so high. The competition is very already real for the producers and for the advertisers. That if you're a producer and you're trying to take a week's vacation, and you have this reality television reaction that we've been talking about, where you suddenly you don't know if you're on the show or you're taking a vacation, and you feel that a knock on the door means it's immunity for you.
So you're telling me that Mr. Redman is suffering from some kind of a psychotic hallucination or delusion that he's on the show.
Look, Survivor takes place, this is what I'm telling you, Survivor takes place in very exotic locations, Panama, Borneo, Samoa. It's very possible he thinks he's on a set of Survivor Cancun, or maybe he thinks he's on a set of the other shows, because he lives and he breathes that show. He's in a tropical location, you understand? Why do you think he picked a tropical location to go to for the vacation?
Well, I mean, I love Cancun. Everybody loves Mexico.
Yeah, I know. But if you're living it 24-7, you're in Borneo, you're in Samoa, you're in Panama, you're in these other... Why would you go there for vacation?
I guess you like it. I don't know.
You not only do you like it, but you live it. You live it. You not only like it, but you live it. Bruce hears a knock on the door. He thinks that he's on the show. Somehow he's going to get immunity if he goes to the door and answers the door first. The wife does. He grabs her by the, I don't know how, he strangles her and somehow throws her out a window or something. Now, this is a, I don't know what happened, but I'm saying to you, if that's the case, and it's very possible it is, do you really give a man like that the death penalty? Or do you give him the very best psychiatric care that you can provide him with and get him back on his feet? And this does not excuse the act, understand?
Well, if you say that the guy kills his wife as the result of some delusion, which is what you're talking about, right?
It's a delusional state, yeah.
Where he thinks that he's on the TV show Survivor, and he kills his wife, and he gets psychiatric help, and he's back on his feet. What does back on his feet mean?
I mean he's back on his feet where he is cognizant, he's thinking clearly again, his mind is not subject to this personality disintegration, these hallucinations, and he can be a part of society again and be a part of what he does so well, which is to create these very entertaining shows, and which, by the way, as I said, they don't cost a lot to make. They make a lot of money for the producers. This is a valuable skill. I don't know what people think of employees that they may have or other people that save their company money, but when you're a Bruce Redman or you're any producer who says, let's do a reality show where we can have, it's not going to cost as much because you don't have to pay the act. You're not paying actors a SAG wage. You're paying, what you're basically doing is you're paying amateurs who go on these shows and try to act like they're, you know, they try to act like they're actors, but they're not. And I know that there's been a problem over the last few years. You're telling these people on these Survivor shows and these other shows, look, just don't ham it up. You know, please don't ham it up.
Oh, they've mentioned that, huh? Because I know that's always been a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, yeah, they told her, will you stop hamming it up? But if Bruce is guilty of murder, there is no doubt that the jury should give him some psychological service and a very, very light sentence in a minimum security prison so he can produce more of these shows, so he can be a benefit. And that's all I'm trying to say.
Well, you're already presenting a defense for this man that has him walking free in a few years.
I don't know in a few years. I'm just telling you. If he did it, it's very likely it was the result of having been chained to this show for so long, this Survivor show, that seeps into your brain, seeps into your mind, that he thought he was on the show. He strangled his wife. And I have to believe that even his wife, if she could speak to us from beyond the grave, would say, you know, you can't blame Bruce. I understand why he killed me, and, you know, it's not a pleasant thing, but almost if she was speaking, if I were him, I would have killed me. You know, I don't know what...
Well, I wonder why he didn't commit suicide or something like that.
Because nobody on Survivor commits suicide. You understand it's a delusion he thinks he's on Survivor?
All right, hold the line. Brad Rifkin with us. He's an advertising executive and a part-time, sometime producer for television. Bruce Redman, the producer of Survivor, one of the producers of Survivor, was arrested, taken into custody by Mexican police and released in the investigation of the death of his wife, Monica Beresford Redman. And it is Brad's idea or thought that if Bruce killed his wife, it was a reaction, some kind of a delusion he was under that he was actually on the TV show Survivor and had to kill her. And it's a psychiatric condition, and he should be allowed to walk after psychiatric treatment. We'll get to your phone calls, and I realize that what we're laying on you guys basically is another Dan White Twinkie defense kind of concept. These things always leave me a little more than a little suspicious. Your thoughts and more with Brad Rifkin. We come back on The Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
I know I said all of that, did I?
Yeah.
Wow.
Let me be as clear as I possibly can. There is no reason in the world we live in today, just as there was no reason in the world that people lived in 100 years ago, not to have a gun in the house, not to know how to use it, not to be as proficient as you can in the use of that weapon, not to know how to use it. No, there's no reason at all why people everywhere shouldn't own guns. Guns have been effectively elevated to the level of a black magic talisman that draw evil spirits. Well, that's not the case. I'm here to tell you folks, you'll be happy to know, that a gun is a collection of components and parts that does a certain thing if it's operated properly. To wit, if somebody's crawling through a bedroom window, you can blow their freaking head off with it. How about that? But you're made to feel ashamed, you're made to feel like you're a criminal, and let's not forget you're a right-wing gun nut. If you ask, may I exercise my constitutional right and own a gun? Yeah, nursing homes ought to have them, schools ought to have them, malls ought to have them, homes should have them, conceal and carry should be allowed on campuses. Oh, yeah. And this other argument that is about as feckless as it gets, which is the following. If everybody has a gun, it'll be a Wild West show. So what you're saying then, in other words, is you're affirming the superstition that the gun creates some voodoo that makes the person want to be violent. Is that it? So are we back now to video games create violence? Phil, back with Brad Rifkin in Las Vegas this evening. Brad, in the advertising business, the television business, a lot of different businesses. We have this man, Brian Sherman, and it's a very it's one of those stories, you know, that you figure you're going to see on Investigation Discovery. You know what I mean, Brad?
Oh yeah, it's got all of the earmarks of Hollywood mystery.
What are the chances? I mean, we're talking about this guy, Mr. Sherman. What is his name now? What is his name?
His name is Bruce Redman. Bruce.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bruce Redman. We're talking about it like he's guilty, you know?
Well, no, I know that, but, and I don't know who did this. But I'm looking at these murders that take place with the wives winding up dead, and a lot of times the husbands do it. I mean, more often than not, the husbands do it, you know? Why do they do it? Is it because she went and she got pregnant? You can talk for years about the reasons a man kills his wife. And you might even have sympathy. I mean, I'm not saying murder is the way to go, you know.
Of course not.
No, but I'm saying if he hadn't killed her, you might have had sympathy. I should probably is what I'm saying. She got pregnant. It's the wrong time, you know. You're just starting to move with your career. You're just starting to move with a lot of things that you're going to do, and here she pops up pregnant, or she wants to move. She this, that. And all of a sudden, you find your hands around her throat, and you are throwing her through a window. I hate to say that. It's a horrible thing.
It's terrible. And the way you're putting it, he's not responsible.
The reason why I say that, Phil, is the nature of these TV shows. Look at the people that watch them. If the people that watch these shows think that they're actually in the show, look at the average survivor viewer or the person that watches that Pimp My Ride or, you know, whatever these shows. He thinks he's some kind of a jungle. He's a jungle man. You know, he's Tarzan. Well, think of what it does to the producers. And the producers sit there week after week living in the reality of Survivor so that when that door knocks, Or the doorbell rings, and it's a guy with room service. All he's doing is he's bringing breakfast, and you think you need to answer the door for immunity, and you don't know what's behind the door, and you find yourself with your hands around your wife's throat, and before you've even really awakened fully for the day, you've broken her neck. Why?
Because you think you're on the TV show Survivor?
Because you're the producer of the TV show Survivor, and you think you're on a TV show. You know, my wife looked like Stephanie, who was a contestant this season on Survivor, Heroes versus Villains. I don't know if you saw it.
No.
So I can understand how to, you know, how this murder, because my wife looked a lot like my wife, and you know Amy.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
Right, she looked a lot like Stephanie. And I there were days when I felt like I could, because I didn't like Stephanie at all. And I wanted to, you know, strangle her, but I wouldn't do it.
Well, what do you mean you wanted to strangle her? See, what you're doing is you're giving an excuse here.
I'm not giving an excuse.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you are. Let me go to a phone call here, because I want people want to check in on this. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And here is Rita. Rita, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Brad Rifkin. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I was just listening to the show, and I've never done this before, but if Survivor produces murders, the show should be done away with totally.
Well, that's a very interesting thought.
Well, we don't know that that's the case, though, ma'am.
We don't, but...
I know. I know.
Saying,
he was just... he was, like, playing
saying,
it
though,
down his head. But,
well, I think what you're saying is... I love Survivor, but I hated Stephanie. Did you ever watch the show?
I said I liked
Survivor, but I hate Stephanie, who was a contestant on Heroes and Villains. Survivor, Heroes and Villains. I hated her. And I could see strangling my own wife because I hated Stephanie, because my wife looked like her. Now, that's dangerous. And if you, Rita, are you married?
No.
All right. If you're ever with a man or a husband and you look like a woman that's on Survivor who is one of these... Excuse me for using the word, one of these bitches, you know what I mean. And the guy looks at the show and then he looks at you and you. Next thing you know, you're on your first date with a man who's got his thumbs on your Adam's apple. And you don't know, you know, why.
All right, Rita, thanks for your call. You're painting a pretty scary scenario here, Brad. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Brad Rifkin and the story of Mr. Redman here in Survivor, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Henry. I didn't want to scare or anything, you know.
World-famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL is the number. Coming up, a mom says her son threatened Nancy Pelosi because of Fox News. Right now we have Brad Rifkin. Brad is with us in Las Vegas as we talk about the the story here in Cancun, Mexico, of the wife of one of the producers, a television producer, and a man who produces one of the producers of Survivor. His name is... Bruce Beresford Redman, his wife Monica Beresford Redman. She was found dead near the hotel yesterday. It's a terribly tragic story, Brad.
Well, and then that's the point. I'm trying to anticipate here that if this was done by Bruce, you know, I don't want people to think the guy's an animal. I want people to understand that it's understandable if you produce a show, you're living with a show, and you're thinking about the show, and it's a jungle show, and you're in jungles, and you're in survival mode, and next thing you know, you've snapped a woman's neck while you're thinking about, you know, plot scenarios and meetings with advertising executives. I mean, that's how quick it can happen. And
well, what about the contestants? What about the people that are on the show? Do they go home? Are they going to live like this?
No, the contestants, I don't think, are a problem because they're actually playing, they're actually in the show. But the producer, if they go home and they kill someone, they don't have an excuse because, well, you were just in the show, now you're done with the show, now you're in reality. But if a producer who's never really given that outlet, he's got to sit on that chair behind the camera and watch as everybody else... gets to be on television, and he doesn't get to. It's gonna, the pressure builds up to the point where you think you're on the show. Your mind has to be on television, and so before you know it, you're looking at a body laying at the foot of some stairs, and you go, "That's my wife. How did she get there?"
You think it was like that, huh?
I'm not saying it happened. If he did it, yeah.
So if you go before a judge, I mean, you're going to need a psychiatrist.
Well, yeah, I think any competent psychiatrist is going to see this as a post-traumatic stress disorder, having sitting behind a camera and not being able to be on TV the way these, you know, let's face it, a bunch of losers get to be on TV and you don't, and you're a producer, that's going to cause post-traumatic stress syndrome disorder, and you're going to, so any... psychiatrist that knows about it will talk to the court about it.
You're talking about PTSD?
Yes, sir.
877, so this man, the producer of this TV show, may be suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder because he is not on the TV show the way these other people are.
That is my belief, yeah.
877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Henry Show. Here is Todd in Hollywood. Todd, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead.
His name is Brad Rifkin. Is that what his name is?
Yes, sir. This is Brad. How are you?
No, I'm Todd.
You asked me if I'm Brad. Yes, sir. This is Brad. How are you?
Hi. How are you doing? My name's Todd, and I've been listening to what you're saying, And I think that you're completely off base. Like, with your statements that you're making, they don't make any sense as far as psychiatric conditions are concerned. I know you have a background in advertising, but you don't have a background in psychiatry. And he didn't suffer a traumatic event that would cause any PTSD. Basically, what happened is, the show may have been stressful, but I don't think he was jealous or envious or trying to get into the position of the actors on the show and feel like he was missing out, okay? But even, let's say, he was stressed out.
What are you basing that on? What are you basing that on? What are you basing that on? See, I worked in television.
What I'm saying is, no, I'm trying to prove that your assessment is baseless. You don't have any, you're just...
I'm telling you that I know when you sit behind the camera and you're looking at a bunch of losers who get to be on TV and you don't, you get stressed. Suddenly you transport yourself into the jungle motif.
You transport yourself.
That's what I'm saying. That doesn't make any logical sense. All of us... Okay.
All right, are you a doctor, sir? Are you a doctor? Are you a
No, but neither are you. And that's what I'm saying.
I work in the medium. Do you work in the medium, at least?
In the entertainment business, yes, but not in television.
Yes.
Okay. But here's the main point that really irked me, that what you said is that he needs to be rehabilitated, okay? And once he's rehabilitated and is better, he needs to get back out there and continue producing his show, these shows, because that's what he's good at. Well, if him producing these shows caused him to kill his wife, then why the hell would he need to get back out there and do these things
anymore? No, I don't know. But I'm saying once he is made whole again and is not delusional about, he's not waking up and looking at his wife in a sewer.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I think the man.
Can I just jump in, guys? Man's not guilty yet.
Well, then you're right about that. Yeah.
I mean, we've got this man already killing his wife, and we don't know. But go ahead, Todd.
I'm with you on that. I'm not presuming guilt at all either. But like you said, we are presuming that he did do it, and the reason for him doing it was that this show had some contributing factor. The last thing that he needs to do is be in reality television anymore. He needs to start, joining a knitting circle or something.
That sounds. I mean, makes sense.
Well, you can laugh, Mr. Henry, but this is what this man does, and I would hope that what we would do is rehabilitate him so that he's not, going loony.
If you are so messed up that you kill someone, this is going to take some rehabilitation.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you mean?
Nobody's going to let him back in reality television. Look at what happened to that one guy who murdered, the Fiore girl. And after that happened, I mean, people now the clearance to get in. You're not going to be able to work in that field anymore if you're guilty.
Well, not if they rehabilitate him so that he's not going. For instance, Todd. If you and I were sitting together in a diner and I made you angry enough in this conversation that you found yourself suddenly, you broke my neck and I'm laying on a sidewalk and you don't remember how it happened, wouldn't you feel that you'd at least like to tell the judge that you went into some kind of a psycho state and then they could, fix it and you'd be out?
What are you saying, man?
Yeah,
you just presented a hypothetical to this guy. I don't even know how you could answer that, Todd.
Well, he was about to. Let the man answer.
I mean, of course, a legal team is always going to, pursue an insanity defense when given the option to do that, and blame it on a psychological state. That could, get you out of, having to do a long prison term or a death penalty. But on the same token, with rehabilitation, people are not going to let you back into a field that
into reality TV show. Yeah, that's what your point was. That's a good point.
You're not going to get back in reality TV. Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, sir. 877-876-PHIL.
Well, he didn't make his point at all. All right. I'm out of prison, and they say you're the guy who strangled your wife. Yes, but I'm, the old Laurel and Hardy line that people laugh at, but it's true. I'm better now.
Yeah, and I remember what Oliver Hardy said. You're better now. He was being extremely sarcastic when he said that, because the fact is, how do you say you're better from murdering somebody?
If you didn't premeditate it, you don't know about second degree murder. They don't keep you. They don't put you in the death house for that. They let you out.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Moving on to another phone call here as we talk to Brad Rifkin about Bruce Redman and the death of his wife in Mexico. Adam, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Brad Rifkin. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm just not sure that standing behind the camera can create PTSD in a human being. I mean, PTSD comes about, as far as I understand it, when you're overpowered by something that's stronger than you and you have no way out. You just have to deal with that idea and that feeling of being completely overpowered by something external.
Exactly.
And I'm just not sure that standing behind a camera, I mean, you may long and maybe even fetishize about being in front of the camera, but as far as that creating some type of stressful situation or some type of psychosis, I don't know. I'm not really buying that idea.
I will tell you, if I can explain this, Phil.
Go ahead.
I think Brian's got to get back to Survivor. It's a classic show, and it's a moneymaker for CBS. They can't afford to lose him. That's number one, and I'm sure the gentleman understands the nature in business when an idea guy for your company, and he's gone. But to sit there and have all of those great ideas, and I've known this guy for years.
You don't remember his name?
It's Brian. It's Brian. To sit there and have these great ideas, and then you're looking at losers that they picked out of a cattle call audition, and they get all the love, right? That's going to cause a man to, you know, you keep it in and you keep it in and you keep it in, and the next thing you know, your wife is laying under a car.
Right.
How did it happen? What happened? I don't know. Do you?
I understand that, man, but at the same time, like, PTSD is based around survival and survival instincts. Like, you're in your survival mode and you're overpowered. So, I mean, but the thing is, if this guy is such a great ideator or whatever he is, you know, standing behind the camera, if he was a producer, right? I understand. But if he really wanted to be in front of the camera, then he and some of his ideating producer friends could come up with a team to get him in front of the camera.
The producer, it's not hard to get in front of a camera for a producer, Brad.
Well, if you're a good producer and you don't have an ego trip going, you're not going to put yourself in front of the camera because it's going to hurt the product. A lot of these producers want to stick themselves in front of a camera because they got an ego trip. But this guy is a good one. And so he sits there knowing I'm good, so I can't put myself in front of the camera, even though I know I'm better than these losers. I still don't want to do it, and now he's resentful. Because he's looking at one loser after the next, going on American Idol, and after they leave Survivor, they're on all these shows, and they write books, and they're in movies, and he's got to sit there, and he's got to suck on it day in and day out until finally that day arrives that his wife is sitting in a chair with no head.
Right.
Now, that will scare the hell out.
What do you mean, no head, man? What is that?
I'm talking the violence of the... Well, what is the gentleman laughing at?
They didn't find her with no head.
Did they find her in a sewer?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that's better, huh?
I mean...
No, it's not. It's not better. I just...
I'm telling the gentleman that you need to understand. I know it doesn't seem like you could get post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, whatever they call it. But when you're in Hollywood and you're looking at a guy like a Richard Hatch, let's say, that gay guy who is a thief and a liar... Boy, you talk about a guy getting every break. Or that Stephanie, who's really hot, but she's not going to have sex with him, which is the other thing, too. You get all these hot-looking women, and they won't touch you with a 10-foot pole, and you're a producer.
And that's going to cause PTSD.
Well, I mean...
Right, I think so.
Yeah.
It sounds like the line of the argument is kind of more along the lines of video games causing school
violence.
Yeah,
there you go. Exactly. It sounds like an excuse.
Not so much.
It sounds like an excuse. Thank you very much, Adam. We got to take a break. You see what the guy's saying?
No, I don't. What are you talking about? Video games cause violence.
It sounds like an excuse. It sounds like that lady saying that Fox News caused her son to threaten Nancy Pelosi.
Well, what, Mr. Henry, are you saying that outside environmental stimulus.
No, but we're learning now as a culture that we can't keep blaming media. And
this isn't media. He's there. It isn't like he's watching TV. He's there. He's looking at this piece of tail that he just cast in the show, and he's thinking, you know, we're breaking for lunch. I got the best trailer, and she won't come near it. Thanks a lot.
Well, you know what? I mean, I can understand what you're saying, but I don't think you call that post-traumatic stress syndrome, that an actress is not going to have sex with you because you're a producer. We're talking about Bruce Redman, the producer, one of them for Survivor. His wife was found dead in Cancun. He was brought in for questioning. He's been released, but he's been told he cannot leave the Cancun area. He cannot leave Quintana Roo, the state, in Mexico, where he was brought in for questioning because they may have some more questions. 877-876-PHIL. Brad Rifkin with us saying that this is the result of his post-traumatic stress syndrome of producing Survivor but not getting to be on the show. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Survivor, not your show.
I didn't say my show.
Yeah, you did. He doesn't have post-traumatic stress.
All right.
Listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL as we talk here with Brad Rifkin, an advertising executive and television producer in Las Vegas tonight, about this very tragic story in Mexico, the death of Monica Beresford Redman, the husband, Bruce Beresford Redman, a 38-year-old producer on the TV show Survivor. We don't know. This man's not guilty. He hasn't been found guilty. He's been talked to by the police.
Absolutely.
But you were talking about this. If he were to be found guilty, he would have a good case in post-traumatic stress syndrome. And again, you've heard people say, you're a TV producer who doesn't, you're not on camera. Is that really that stressful?
Well, I'll give you an example, Phil. There was a contestant on Survivor by the name of Colby. Now, here's Bruce, what's his last name?
I thought you said the man's a good friend of yours.
Yeah, he's a very dear friend. Redman, I keep thinking of the maiden. He's got a hyphenated name, and this kid Colby is on the show. Now the kid goes on to go on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he becomes kind of a star. And there's Bruce. You see, when you're a producer and you're stuck eating craft services, and there's a woman in the morning saying, "You want an omelet?" And meanwhile, Colby gets to go to his dressing room, and who knows what they got, some piece of tail that they got sitting there. So, yes. Now I can tell you, Mr. Henry, that the tragedy of this is that Bruce is on a TV show where they often deny people food. And I think that when the doorbell rang for room service, he felt he was in an episode of Survivor where he was going to win food if he answered the door first, and he didn't. And he twisted his wife's head like they, if you've ever seen what they do with chickens, all the way around. I don't know.
You don't know what happened to her.
Well, I can well imagine just twisted it, around in like they do in a circle, if you've ever seen it in the movies. And that's the horror of this,
You didn't see her. You don't know what happened. And to speculate like that is gruesome. And post-traumatic stress syndrome, because one of the kids on the show went on to become, he went on Curb Your Enthusiasm, to me, is it doesn't sound like a very professional producer.
But he said he's eating craft services.
All right, so he's got to eat craft services. I guess that's the lot of a producer. Here is Jim in Boston, Massachusetts, listening on WTKK. Jim, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Brad Rifkin.
How you doing?
Yes, sir.
Want to let him know.
How you doing?
All right. I just want to let you know that, Brad, you're so far off base on this, and the message that you're really sending out is just, it's really not, that wise for what you're saying. Me, personally, I do suffer from PTSD, and I'll tell you right now, it's definitely nothing related to from sitting behind a camera, and that's just clearly not something that would trigger PTSD. I mean, I don't know, maybe you should go down to, like, some of the veteran shelters and ask them guys if you compare what they're going through.
Oh, yeah, no, I know about that. Yeah, I did a movie once. Yeah, I did a movie once about a guy that had the flashbacks, and he twisted a guy's head and everything. And,
I don't want to hear about your movie, okay? We're talking to a gentleman here that suffers from this.
I'm saying that...
I mean, as far as...
as far as what your point you're making, it's completely, you know, insane. I mean, this guy, if anything, for the reason that he killed somebody would be true. If in fact he did, we don't even know this, but if this guy did kill his wife over something like this, this is more of a delusional situation. Clearly nothing that stems from PTSD or anything relevant to that. If you'd even make that statement, and instead to follow it up, you're rambling on about, you know, about him being back in the field and he's missing out on things. You're talking about a woman's death here. That's somebody's mother, their sister, their daughter, and your primary concern is that this guy's going to get back into the camera industry. If he killed this woman, you know, they should be filming him getting fried. That's what they should do with the camera.
Yeah, but if he thought he was actually on the TV show Survivor, if he thought he was delusional, like you were saying, and they thought he was on Survivor, and the next thing you know, he twisted it, you know, like they do with the head that goes all the way around. That's a sickness.
What is it with you and twisting the head around?
Because you don't know. I mean, I don't know how she died. But this gentleman I'm talking to, I'm very interested. Was you in a war or something?
Let's not be intrusive, okay?
I'm just curious.
I'd rather, if you don't want to talk about it, Jim, you don't have to. You don't have to talk about it, Jim. You don't. Believe me.
Well, I wanted to write a script about a guy that comes back from Iraq, and you know, and he has a flashback. See, and
look,
yeah, well, I mean,
Brad, I'm not interested in your. We're not.
You're talking about two different situations here. I mean, you're talking about something. What's he flashing back to? There's nothing even relevant.
He's flashing back to the piece of. He's flashing back to the piece of tail that he could have had that this Kobe had. He's flashing back.
That's got nothing to do with exactly. I will be Phil Hendry show.
He's flashing back to a piece of tail that he can't have.
Exactly. He could have had. And Eric could have.
Phil Hendry. The shores of El Pacifico. Bill Hendry.
There are reports that Charlie Sheen could be leaving his hit show 2.5 Men.
Any reasonable person looking critically at the evidence currently in the public domain.
These men are mimicking Jesus' walk to Calvary.
More than 1 million cases of chlamydia were reported in the U.S. during 2006.
And that's just the way it is.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go wherever we gotta go to entertain you and to illustrate, you know, through the looking glass, this entire thing called talk radio, opinion, news. I guarantee you there is no other talk show on the air like this one, and there isn't a talk show on the air such as this one that has more of a devoted following, and it includes some pretty heavy people like Glenn Beck and Howard Stern. Anyway, the number 877-876-PHIL. How do you celebrate Good Friday? In the Philippines, you nail yourself to a cross. That and more coming up. Plus, your pilot can now fly while on antidepressants. That's good news as far as I'm concerned. 877-876-PHIL, our affiliate spotlight tonight. Greensboro, Winston, North Carolina, WSJS 600 AM, and Little Rock, Arkansas, KDXE at 1380. We are very, very grateful to have both these great stations on our network, and we are also planning on welcoming aboard the cities of Buffalo, New York, Reno, Nevada, and Grand Forks, North Dakota. Coming up next week here on The Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Now, the story today. And I will tell you this, you know, it's a funny thing about health care and the Tea Party. All of these stories seem to, at times, like tributaries that will meet and join a river for a few miles and then sort of disperse again. That's kind of the way these news stories go. There's a very, very definite linkage between senior citizens, health care, obviously, and, you know, the Tea Party. Things like that. We're going to talk here in a moment with Jay Santos from the Citizens Auxiliary Police about seniors and this burgeoning number of them. 1 in 4 of our elderly will need care decisions made for them. I don't know why I'm saying our elderly. I guess I'm one of them, man. I'm 57. I guess by the time all this stuff really starts heating up, I'm going to be one of these guys that'll be sitting in a chair and somebody's got to decide whether they should flush it or not, you know? How do you like that, man? Anyway, a significant number of the elderly, more than one in four, will eventually need someone to make end-of-life decisions about their medical care, according to a new study. The result illustrates the value of people making their wishes known in a living will and designating someone to make treatment decisions for them, according to this research. Jay Santos, Citizens Auxiliary Police. Jay, you have a database?
Oh, that's correct, Phil.
And is this database something that contains a lot of names, right, and a lot of people? I mean, I can't even imagine how you begin to amass the names of senior citizens who may need these kinds of end-of-life decisions made for them.
Well, Phil, first of all, thanks for having us back on your program tonight.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. This is a decision that sometimes these families are too distraught to make. Families may not be around at the time to make these decisions. Families may not be able to find, we may not be able to find the families. What we've done at the Citizens Auxiliary Police is we have taken it upon ourselves, part of our senior database, to collect as much information as we can, to go out and to interview some of our seniors and find out what kind of end-of-life decisions should be made for them. This is a very easy process. The difficult part is, as you said, you know, keeping a database, but we are able to put it into computers on hard disk. We have now legal pads. And I'm a little bit nervous tonight, Phil, because I just kind of...
No, you're doing a good job. Just tell me about... So what you're doing, if the elderly need these end-of-life decisions made, and what kind of end-of-life decisions are we talking about, Jay?
Right. What we're talking about is this person going to need assistance moving around? Are they going to be cognizant? Will this person, God forbid, is this person going to need decisions made in terms of life and death? What kind of nursing home will this person need? Are they going to? What kind of medical insurance? What kind of hospital equipment will they need in their own home if they're not in a hospital? And you do need power of attorney if the individual does not have the cognizance for these end-of-life decisions. So what we do is we go out into the malls, at a lot of places here in the South Bay and Southern California, and a lot of the other ones. Citizens auxiliary groups like Gator Brigade, Beaver Battalion, New York City Police, the West Texas Range Riders, and these other groups that are we're familiar with, will go out and take down the names and do an assessment right there.
Are you making appointments with senior citizens, or are you just knocking on doors?
In some instances, we'll just knock on doors. In other instances, we could be out in a public arena like a mall or a movie theater or in a supermarket or out in a department store, what have you, and we will assess the senior citizen, ask them their age up to a point, if they're capable of answering a question, and then we will assess and make that decision at that time. Where will they be 5 years from now?
All right, so the senior citizens you're talking to are not yet at risk, right?
No, they're not yet ready. But what we're doing is getting them ready, because at the time that they need to make this decision, they're not going to be capable of doing that.
So give me a typical assessment that you will do so that these seniors will have this decision made for them and that their later life obviously is a little bit more comfortable.
Well, for instance, last Monday, we had a difficult time because this gentleman was very talkative, he was very cognizant, he was very bright, but he was in a wheelchair. He was in a mobile hospital transport that was more of a flex kind of wheelchair. So I looked at him, and I realized that he was someone who obviously had mental capacity, but he did not have physical capacity. That probably means that he will have to be in some kind of a psychiatric ward because of the fact that he talks a lot, but he's in a wheelchair, and there'll be some suspicion. So we went ahead and marked down on a chart, a mental facility or a psychiatric facility for him.
I don't understand that.
In what way?
What you're talking to an elderly man. Did you get his name?
Yes, we got his name. We got his basic statistics, his height, his weight, as far as he knew them.
And so you said because he was talkative, but he's in a wheelchair, that you think a psychiatric facility.
When he's older. We're not talking now, Phil. We're not talking now.
Yeah, but why when he's older?
Because of this very loquacious manner the man had. Very, very loquacious, very talkative, and yet he's in a he's incapacitated. He's almost tied in. The older you get and the more you are communicative in this very loquacious, rapidly loquacious manner, and yet you have to be strapped into a chair. The idea around people around you are probably going to think that you're, if I'm going to use a term, a cuckoo or kind of kooky. Not that you are, okay? Not that you are. But we have to consider that.
So you're going to take a man who is perfectly healthy, just understand, you know, Jay, a man who's talking and put him in a psychiatric facility.
Just for the moment. That's one of the options. The other option is that he's fine and can be left alone. Although he needs to be checked on, obviously, because he doesn't have full locomotion. And that's where we have cameras set up at the doors. Because someone in a wheelchair, Phil, there's a 90% chance that an elderly person in a wheelchair is going to go down those steps. And that's, you know, show's over.
What do you mean show? You mean they're going to be, it could be fatal.
Absolutely, yeah. So we have to make that decision. There are a lot of these decisions. We talked to an elderly woman. Who was walking on a walker. She did not look well. We figure that she is most likely going to be a candidate for just determination if the doctor says you don't have any choice. You have to pull the plug. And so that's what we put on our chart.
But you don't know these people, and you don't really know if there's not going to be family around.
No, we don't, Phil.
So how are you going to make these decisions?
Well, we ask for the power of attorney only in end-of-life decisions. Got nothing to do with
power of attorney they're giving you.
Only an end-of-life decision. It's got nothing to do with their money. It has nothing to do with property. It only has to do with the disposition of the elderly person himself and whether that person can live on their own. Obviously, the older someone gets, the more they have to be in an assisted facility. Whether putting them in an assisted facility is worth it, or should they go directly into a mental institution or a psychiatric institution, or just be put... I don't want to use the word they use, put down or.
Well, that's the term they use for dogs.
Yeah, I guess.
Terminating the, you know, if they're so sick, someone has to make the decision to pull the plug.
That's correct, yes, sir. Now, we've used the term as shorthand, they're put down or they're put to sleep, but.
Well, that's a term that's used for the.
Veterinarian.
Exactly, yeah. All right, Jay Santos with us here on the Phil Hendry Show. These end-of-life decisions that the senior citizens are not capable of making, you guys at the Citizens Auxiliary Police are making them for these people. But they're total strangers.
Well, you say they're total strangers. Not after we're done talking to them, especially what if there is no family around? What if there is no person can make a decision like this? I'm not a doctor, but I can tell you this much, Phil. Look at all the money we've wasted on doctors trying to keep people from becoming more sick. We do have a database. We have computers. We've got a lot of computers, and that's where you keep records now. If you're familiar, records are kept on computers, and we do have computers.
Yeah, that's. I understand that.
All right. And the other thing is that there's going to be a lot of senior citizens who are not going to be capable of making these end-of-life decisions still that they need to make. We have accepted this challenge at the Citizens Auxiliary Police. It's not something we want to do, but we will take it upon ourselves to record what those NOI decisions should be and make sure they get to the right people. And
well, now, when you say get to the right people, before we take a break, what do you mean by that?
Well, if the person goes into the hospital, we can go to the doctor and say, this is what the assessment is. This person should have, you know, unfortunately, you know, have the plug, you know, take the plug out of the wall or not, or put into some other facility. That may be a, you know, a whole facility or something with extra protection or security, you know, double locked doors, that kind of thing.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Our senior citizens who cannot make these decisions for themselves, end of life decisions. Where are they going to be in the hospital? Who will pull the plug if you need to pull the plug? What kind of wheelchair are they going to have? And if there's no family around, who will make the decision? Mr. Santos and the Citizens Auxiliary Police, one of many groups, I guess, volunteering to do this. 877-876-PHIL. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be back with Jay Sanis and talk more about this in a moment.
Phil Hendry. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. And this is a rather involved conversation we're having here tonight with Jay Sanis from the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Now, you guys are, so people know, you're not an official police force.
You and I have had this conversation.
I know we've had the conversation, but I feel that I need to have to get this out there.
This has got nothing to do with law enforcement. This is a public service that we are providing. We're doing this at our own cost, at our own expense. We're going to senior citizens, and we're finding out, assessing where they are going to eventually wind up.
Well, you're assessing senior citizens, and you're saying, well, this one here is going to have to be in assisted living. This one here is going to need a wheelchair. This one here will probably need the plug pulled, and I don't know how you do that, you know.
Well, Phil, I'm not saying this one's going to need the plug pulled. We were following an elderly woman who was in a grocery store down here in Torrance last weekend.
When you say you're following an elderly woman, what are you doing?
We are tracking her. We are watching her. Why the question?
Well, if I were her, I would feel a little intimidated.
This woman, I can assure you, I don't know if she knew that there was anybody around her. And that's why we went ahead and gave her a red check. And said, you know, I gave her a tip of the pin tell and I was on my way.
Well, what does that mean? The red check is the plug gets pulled?
That was our assessment, yes, sir. That was our assessment.
Did you talk to her?
We got her name. And
she gave you her name?
Well, in that case, a lot of these people will say hi, and they give you Helen, and they don't give you a last name. But we can figure where she lives, what her last name is. This right. See? You feel that this is intrusive.
I think that it's a little intrusive if you're following an elderly woman, then you put a red check next to her and you say, you are going to make that decision.
I'm going to take this information to the hospital where she eventually is going to wind up. Because this is the tragedy of old age, Phil. I didn't make this world. That woman is bound to fall downstairs. She's bound to fall down a flight of stairs. I don't know what. And then there's going to be a hospital visit, and they're going to need someone there to say, here's the information on her, and as far as we were able to determine, she is probably at some point going to need to have those life-supporting services suspended.
As far as you were concerned?
That is correct, yeah.
All right.
Because, again, there's only one out of four elderly going to need these care decisions. What are we going to do? There's no family around there.
Well, when you say that you're looking at this old lady and you have decided that you got to pull the plug on her, and that's not for a while, it all seems, I guess, very mechanical, you know?
Well, I know, Phil, but we have to be efficient, and I didn't make this world, and I'm not the one that left that poor old woman to wander a supermarket by herself, holding a box of dried noodles, and that was it. She was there for an hour.
877-877 need care decisions made for them. Here is Sharon. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police.
Yes. Hi. Phil?
Hi.
I cannot believe the trash coming from this guy's mouth. I'm sorry. I'm listening to you from Rhode Island, and I've listened to you many times and enjoy your show. And
thank you.
Basically, if he was to track me over the last 5 years, it would put me down. Friends and family.
What? You're not elderly. You don't sound elderly. Elderly to me. Let's talk about seniors, senior citizen.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, if he's tracking the elderly for this, I mean, what to say his group isn't going to say, okay, with this new medical plan and we need to save money where we can, we'll just stop treating and make plans for people as they get younger. In my case, I'm in my 40s. I'm still working. I work a full-time job. But there are
what about
a lot
that, Jake?
Well, we're not doing well.
I don't know. You're, yeah, exactly. I'm going to look at you. And if you fall down and you break your leg, or I know you're a young woman, but at what point do you decide that you're really not any good for anything? I'm not going to say any good for anything, but at what point do you decide you're not really any good to anybody? You know, do you want to make that decision? Do I make that? How do you do that?
Well, she makes the decision. She's a young woman, all right?
She's a young woman now, yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry, ma'am. I interrupted.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If I'm, you know, if you're saying, you know, you don't know if these people have family members. Well,
exactly.
Why wouldn't it be their family who takes care of them? Their
well,
family that
point.
Has to make the decision.
That's a very good point. But what if the family's not there? What if I happen to be at the hospital and the family's 200 miles away? I don't know where they are. If you, even a young woman like you, were to fall down and you're already, I think you mentioned you're already handicapped, do I say, well, I'm the only one here. I'm Jay Sanders. I took down Sharon's information. As far as I could tell, you have to suspend life support. And,
well, wait. You're talking about a young woman here.
But she made the point that she's not doing too good. Or do you feel that you're like what we call pre-senior? Sharon?
Yeah, I have things
you're
set up myself because, you know what? My mother is also handicapped, and she has the beginning of Alzheimer's.
Right.
And seeing as how there's Alzheimer's
totally
on both sides of the family, I have to take her medical care in my hands. And at some point, someone will have to do it for me. I know this because I've taken the test and I'm carrying the gene.
Do you feel tapped out right now, though?
What do you mean, tapped out?
I feel as if she's ready. Well, you know what I'm saying.
No, actually,
she's
not.
Are you saying that she's ready to die?
Yeah, that's all I'm asking. Is she ready? Are you ready to die? No.
Oh, no, I'm nowhere near ready to die. In fact, I get up every morning, and
I work at
one of the biggest and largest banks in the country and provide financial information to people.
Well, that's very good.
And I'm one of the top producers.
Right,
so
but
I have
you get
a brain,
out.
A mouth.
Let's not use. This is a woman in her 40s, so she's not tapped out, as you put it.
That's a medical term. I didn't mean to say. But Sharon's going to need to make a decision sooner or later for the mother who's got Alzheimer's. And I'll tell you a story, Sharon, and this is very sad. I walked into a home where an old lady was boiling her own underwear, if you can believe that. And when I asked her, what are you doing? She said, I'm making soup. And what do you say then? You say, you know, she's tapped out.
All right, hold on. Sharon, thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL, boiling her own underwear. We'll be back. Jay Sanos, 1 in 4 elderly need care decisions made for them. Jay Sanos of the Citizens of Philly Police Department Show.
Woo! Phil Hendry.
He's tapped out.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about as we speak tonight to Jay Sanos. He's with the Citizens Auxiliary Police. This is a, you don't like me calling it a volunteer police agency.
We've always said, Phil, that we are an auxiliary, and that's all that really needs to be said. We're an auxiliary police agency.
And you are amassing information from senior citizens as to their physical condition, their health, their state of mind, so that you can know what to do with them when those end-of-life decisions come.
So look, if I could interrupt you for just a moment.
Go ahead.
Healthcare costs are skyrocketing. Everybody know it. And it doesn't really look like, I don't know, but to me and a lot of people who observe the news, it doesn't look like Obama's going to make this healthcare plan stick. I don't know. They're looking to repeal it. So we're going to have to do our part. And we're going to have to encourage a lot of these doctors, and I have interviewed a lot of these senior citizens, encourage these doctors to try to, if we can, keep the cost low. I'm not saying that we want our senior citizens to be uncomfortable, but we do have to make these very quick diagnoses. I'm talking to someone, as I did, I talked to a lady yesterday. She was very irritable. She didn't want to talk to me. She was very rude. We'll put down, which I don't think there's anything wrong with writing down that that's a woman who's probably going to need restraints when she is in a facility. Some old man who's very talkative, is it that much of a step to say that probably he's going to need some sort of psychiatric care? And on it goes. You know, we have these old gentlemen who we call the tiny steppers. These are the guys that have no real
flexibility in their legs, these guys are going to be tapped out. You talk about tap out.
When you say tapped out, are you saying these are people that are going to have to be have the plug pulled?
That's my anticipation, right. But again, health care costs are going to go through the roof, and we've got to do something to keep it down.
877-876-PHIL with Jay Santos here. Let's go to another phone call tonight. We have Rita in Lewisburg, Tennessee. Rita, hi. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Jay Santos.
Hi, Phil. How are you tonight?
Yes, ma'am. I'm good. Thank you.
This guy is barbaric. If anybody needs to be put in a mental institution, he does. He sounds
I'd love for you to tell me why, ma'am. I'd love for you to tell me why. How old are you? I'm 37 years old, ma'am.
Well, you wait till you get to be 70 or 80 and somebody is making the decision whether you're going to live or whether you're not going to live. And you are talking like a Hitler. And you said...
That's ridiculous.
Can I talk, Phil? Phil, can I talk?
Yes, let the lady talk.
Well, I'm not going to let her call me Adolf Hitler. Everyone knows what he did.
All right, I understand, but let the lady make her point.
You're trying to make a perfect society, and I mean, just because somebody's old does not mean they do not have plenty to offer in this world. And the elderly can teach the young people what they know. They have much to offer, even if they're sitting in a wheelchair. And this man is crazy.
Well, what do you do with an elderly person who seems unteachable?
No wonder the woman got irritable with him. He needs to be... Somebody needs to come and lock him up. What kind of auxiliary is this?
I will tell you, ma'am, if a man is tapped out, what are you going to learn from him?
Well, when you say tapped out, are you saying he can't speak?
Well, if a guy tapped out, what are you going to learn from a guy that's tapped out? That's my question, Mr. Henry. Tapped to the guy that's ready to shuffle off. I don't want to. You want me to use the word?
You are insane.
Do you want me to use the word?
Somebody needs to shuffle.
Are you talking about if the man is dead? Is that what you're saying?
If he's ready to die, if he's ready to shuffle, yes. What are you going to learn from a man who is in a sealed container?
If he's in a coma, you said that this man sitting in the wheelchair, you were going to send him to a mental hospital. I mean, because he talked and had conversation. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Let me ask a question here, if I could.
People in wheelchairs have very much love to give people, no matter how age they are. A lot of them in wheelchairs are the ones that fought for our country so that we can have freedom, so you can sit there and act like some kind of nut.
Well, ma'am, most of our veterans are treated very well medically, so we don't see a lot of veterans in wheelchairs.
The
guys are in wheelchairs from World War I or Spanish America.
Hold on for a minute. I want to ask a question here, Jay. I want to ask you this question. If a man is talkative and he's a chatty older gentleman, why do you mark him down for eventual commitment to a psychiatric facility?
Phil, it's not because he's talkative. It's because he's talkative and he's in a wheelchair. Now, I don't know if this lady or you have ever been in a bar where there's a guy in a wheelchair. That's the guy that starts the fight. The guy in a wheelchair.
My mother was in a wheelchair, and she had plenty to offer.
Did she hang out in bars?
She was a kind, sweet woman. No, she didn't hang out in bars, but you're just going out and just talking to people. No wonder the woman was annoyed with you yesterday. You are a nut.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying, Phil, if you go into a bar, the guy in the wheelchair is the guy that's going to start the fight. And now when you got a guy that's talking to
him. How do you know that, man?
Get out of here. I've been in enough bar rooms to do that, Phil. A guy in a wheelchair, he's the one that's got the gun.
Wait a minute, man. We're not even talking about a guy in a bar. We're talking about an older gentleman who was very affable. He was talking to you. He was friendly.
Exactly.
This man is the one that needs to be put in a mental institution.
Excuse me, ma'am. I'm trying to do something that nobody else is doing.
I've never called into one, and I was sitting here listening to this. I didn't know where it was coming from, and I thought,
you know exactly what I talk about. And the man said to me, oh, yeah, I was in the Spanish-American War, and that's when I knew this guy eventually is going to have to be locked up.
Why do you got to lock him up for that?
He's
babbling.
He
First of all, the Spanish-American War, the guy must be...
I can tell you, I'm talking to him about, you know, what hospital you want to stay in, and he starts blathering on about Cuba, and that's got nothing to do with anything. He starts talking to me about the Spanish-American War and blowing up the Maine.
Maybe he is going to talk about that.
Jay, first of all, and I want to thank you very much, Rita, for your phone call, 877-876-PHIL. First of all, I doubt very much if you were talking to a veteran of the Spanish-American War. Secondly...
Right there, the guy is, I don't want to say cuckoo or however you want to put it.
But the point here is that this guy is just... You were asking about his age, right?
Oh, that's about his age. I didn't want him to get into his military record from... You know, start talking about going up a rough ride. Or you saying he took a rough ride. And I didn't know whether we had one of these don't ask, don't tell. Or
the Rough Riders? You mean the Teddy Roosevelt Rough Riders?
I was not familiar with it. All I know is he said, yeah, I'm rough riding. And I thought, that's his... I'm not going to say he belongs in a mental institution on account of that.
He's talking of the Spanish-American War. Probably was Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders. What'd you think it meant? That he was gay?
Mr. Henry,
That's what you thought, huh?
We are trying to help this country save money. Obamacare is going to get rolled back. You know it, I know it. She knows it, he knows it. My wife knows it, my kids know it. Guy across the street knows it.
All right, I get the idea. It's going to get rolled back.
All right, and we are going to have to find a way to cut these costs.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go to another phone call here. I have Lee on the line. Lee, you're on with Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mr. Jay. Could you please tell me what credentials you have to make these decisions?
Well, I'm a member of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. I'm a brigadier of Admiral the organization.
No. What credentials do you have to make these medical and mental decisions?
I like to think that I'm a citizen physician. We have in this country right now a medical establishment that has stolen billions and billions of dollars. And what's going on? I'll tell you what. People are dying.
So you have a degree then?
I have a degree. Let me tell you the degree I've got in. It's called life. I got a degree in life.
I think the gentleman's at... Do you have any degree, Jay, in anything...
I got a degree in life, Mr. Henry. I don't want a
barber working on my car if he's not a mechanic.
The medical establishment is... Do you deny the medical establishment has stolen billions and billions of dollars from American people? Of course you don't deny that. You know that. So we need citizen physicians.
And we don't need a citizen physician doing brain surgery, do we?
I'm not talking about that, Mr. Henry. I'm talking about what do we do with an elderly man who's talking to himself in a wheelchair in a parking lot? What do we do with an old lady who's walking around a supermarket for an hour with a box of noodles and she forgot why she went in there? What do we do that? Who's going to do that? Me? You? Me.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Jay. Do you ever forget something early in the morning?
Sir, it's one thing to forget something. It's another thing to boil your own underwear because you're going to make soup. And that's exactly what we saw when we walked into that woman's home 2 weeks ago over here in La Cañada. She's boiling her own underwear.
And what if you forget your keys to your car to go to work?
You know, that's not the same thing at all. You can forget your keys to your car. I forgot my keys to my car. I'll go back in and get them. But boiling my own underwear, figuring I'm going to sit down and have that for dinner?
Well, maybe she's trying to clean it.
Well, that is a good point.
It was soup. Soup.
It was soup? Well, maybe she likes
soup.
Kind of soup.
All right. I can tell you're not serious. You know what, sir? I'm doing something. You're sitting on your ass.
All right. 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be back with more from Jay Sanis.
listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil, and welcome back, Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Now, this idea of going around and interviewing elderly people and finding out how they are best going to be served when end-of-life decisions come about. Do you ever try to contact members of their family?
Do I ever try to do what?
Do you ever try to contact members of their family so that you don't find yourself making these decisions?
It's really, I find it very interesting. That people are saying they don't want Obamacare, which I don't blame them. I think Obamacare is very socialism, and I'm not in favor of that at all. But we got to do something because Obamacare, which I hope they repeal it. But you know how much these people are going to cost us.
No, my question isn't about Obamacare. It's about, do you contact the families of these people?
I find that it is far more easier to simply do a quick assessment, file the paperwork, tip it a fifth element, I'm on my way.
Well, what do you call a quick assessment? Why not try to contact the family?
If I see a man, I told you that guy was jabbering on about the Spanish-American War, you're trying to tell me that he belongs. So what would you say? Pull the plug?
No, I'm not saying pull the plug. Why does a man belong in a psychiatric hospital?
Spanish-American War? Come on!
Well, that's what I was saying to you.
I know.
I mean, I was telling you that I didn't think he could be a spend. This doesn't necessarily mean that he's crazy. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Jack. Go ahead, Jack. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Okay. I want to address that idiot you got on the line there.
Mr. Hendry?
No, he's talking about you. He's talking about you, Mr. Santos.
I'm talking about you, Mr. J. Santos. You are right.
You said the idiot. Shut up a minute and listen. It's for health care in America.
Will you let's listen to the guy?
Shut your mouth and listen, man.
Health care in America. I don't let people tell me to shut my mouth ordinarily.
I've sit here to listen. You rattle like garbage. Let me tell you something. I'm in a wheelchair. I had a stroke 7 years ago. I live by myself. I cook for myself. I wash my own clothes. I go wherever I want to go. I go all over Nashville. Anywhere in Nashville, I go to. I'm a season ticket to a hockey team.
There you go.
I've got an IQ of 130. Give 36 years of my life.
How can you have an IQ of 130 and be a hockey fan?
Okay, Jay.
No, I'm being very serious now.
What did he say?
I said, how can you have an IQ of 130 and be a hockey fan? And by the way,
you ain't nothing but an idiot. You're nothing but an idiot. I spent 36 years of my life in law enforcement. I've got degrees in it. I've got plaques and accommodations from every federal unit in the United
States.
There
you go.
I'm not saying you haven't had a good life, sir, but I am saying it's possible you're tapped out.
I tell you what you do. You come to Nashville, Tennessee, and follow me around. I mean, you won't follow me over five steps. Bring your little pad and start following me around, and you'll get your interview. Can an idiot understand that? Does an idiot understand that?
Mr. Henry,
do you understand, Jake?
Yes, I do, and I'd like to make an assessment right now, this gentleman, because I've been assessing him while he's been talking to me. He says he goes to hockey. I think he's imagining things because everybody knows what hockey in Nashville is. That
they've had a hockey team in Nashville for a number of years.
Well, I was not familiar with that, so okay.
Since 1998.
Nashville, the Predators.
That's exactly correct.
The Predators. That sounds
exactly correct.
I'll go ahead and do it.
All right, Nate says that he has an IQ of 139. Well, that's suspect, too. So if this man's delusional...
Why do you think he's delusional? Because he goes to hockey and has a IQ of 139? Why is that delusional?
Because, Mr. Henry, he's the kind of guy that starts the fight in the bar. He's the guy that starts the fight in the bar.
I don't go to bars. I don't even drink. I don't drink. Haven't smoked a cigarette in 12 years. In 12 years.
You're the guy in a wheelchair who insists on using the pool table.
Now, well, listen, you sound all right to me.
If you can shut up, man.
I don't know if he's qualified to talk.
All right, look, I got to take a break. I think you're very, very healthy, and you sound like a good man there, Jack. And I think that you being going to hockey games sounds very, very healthy. And
are you qualified, Mr. Oh, here he is. I'm looking at the TV right now. This is Erica Badu. Well, she's got a big butt on her, don't she? And
all right, I don't want to talk about that.
I'm sorry, but it was part of the... We were looking at this today, Phil.
I'm not talking about that, am I?
No, sir, you're not.
We were talking about this gentleman, and you... Okay, so what's your assessment of Jack? He's in a wheelchair, he goes to hockey games, he is a high IQ, he's got a degree.
That's when he wasn't in a wheelchair, all right? Now that he is in a wheelchair, I would, unfortunately, have to recommend him for restraint.
And for restraints.
Yes, because I can see that by the time he gets to be much older, and by the time he has to go, when he is eventually tapped out and he's all in, they'll have to probably tie him down. Now, that's my only concern. And people say, what right do you have? Well, where is his family that's going to make a call like that?
Well, maybe they're around. And I can only hope and pray that they're around so that you're not around to have the guy put in restraints because he happens to like hockey. Martel, you're on the Phil Henry Show, listening to us on K-Talk in Los Angeles tonight. Martel, go ahead.
Hello. I just got to ask one quick question.
Yes, sir.
Jay,
you there?
How many people have you disconnected, with your job and all?
You mean hung up on?
Yeah.
Oh, I've hung up on a lot of people.
Do you feel good about it?
Hanging up on people? Yeah, if I have to hang up on them.
I think you're talking about something else.
Disconnect them.
Disconnect them from what? Reality?
From the wall, man. Pull the plug.
Right.
Oh. No, I don't do that. My recommendation would be if a guy's tapped out.
Can we not use that term?
The technical term is...
I don't care. I don't want to use that term.
Well, my recommendation would be I would recommend that, sir. I've never physically done that myself. Although I have unplugged vacuum cleaners things. I don't know if that's the same thing.
No, that's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
One more thing. Do these people that get unplugged, do they ever have, like, a proper funeral? You know what I mean? Like,
I hope so. I hope
or,
so.
Or it's like, you know, guys bury a hole in the ground, like, you know, back in World War II, a ditch, just throw the bodies in there. And forget about it.
I don't know. With the cost of health care and the expense that goes into, well, I guess it doesn't cost that much to dig a hole.
No, it doesn't cost that much to dig. Thank you very much, Martel. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, Jay Santos, and he's making sure nobody's tapped out. We'll be back coming up next on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, Art Griego.
Phil Henry.
And the TV.